This is the European edition of Breaking Banks, the world's number one fintech podcast and radio show. We bring you the European unicorns, startups, founders, regulators, and leaders innovating the rapidly evolving fintech scene today. A truly localized podcast with both English and local language content with some of the world's most well-known hosts and influencers in the fintech sector globally. Join us every week as we explore what makes the European Union a phenomenal proving ground for many of the fastest growing fintech plays in the world today. Okay, let's roll.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Breaking Banks Europe. I'm Francesca Liverti, and I'm going to be your host for today. This week, we are going to deep dive into our series of Breaking Impact, and specifically on the topic of financial literacy and financial education on a specific target, which is the young generation and their financial well-being. And before introducing you, our guest for this episode, I want to start with some interesting numbers that I came across lately. So according to Crunchbase, in the past 5 years, investors infused $535 million into almost 90 deals with fintech that offer saving platforms for children. And I think this is, as I was saying, quite an interesting number. And we are lucky enough to have one of those fintech together with us today, the CEO of Gimi, a Swedish startup. And I'm very happy to introduce you. So let's welcome to the show Philip Haglund, CEO and founder indeed of Gimi. Welcome, Philip.
Thank you, Francesca. Great to be here.
Thanks for joining us. So let's start talking a little bit more about your company, about Gimi. And I've looked into it, and to be honest, defining it only as a money management app is quite not fair, I have to say. I mean, your scope is much more extensive, as I understood, much more than just a money app. So could you tell us a little bit more how you tackle also the topic of financial education for children and how you developed Gimi?
Yeah, sure. So in short, Gimi was founded back in 2015. Been working with it since. As you say, it's not just a money management tool. It's very much about like how children actually learn about money. And when we're working with that, we're actually looking at three different aspects. So if you want to have money learnings and children are to be taught around money, they can do it in different ways. So the most common one is that you actually learn by doing something. So if you want to learn about money, you actually need to have access to money. So what we've seen pretty much is that there's a lot of children that don't have access to money. They don't have access to a bank account. They don't have access to digital money. So that's one part of it. The second part of it is around the knowledge and the theory around money. Like, could you understand the interest rate? Could you understand a bank statement? Those things. So the knowledge is usually something that we are being taught in school. So we usually teach those things so that children are, you know, able to tackle all the financial challenges they have when they grow up and when they become adults. The third thing which children can actually learn is called socialization. It's about children looking at their parents or talking to their parents and trying to maybe copy their behavior. And this is actually the most common way for children to learn about money today. And that's also why financial literacy is usually inherited. So you usually grow up within a family, and if your parents are good with money, you usually also become a little bit better with it. So when we're developing Gimi, we're trying to look at these three different aspects. So we're trying to create different kind of features, which I would say it's not about fintechs, it's about edtech. So it's what the feature is doing with how you're thinking about money. If you are creating feedback loops in which you actually try to evaluate how you're spending money, how you're saving your money, and so forth. So in general, if you want to teach a child about financial literacy or become smart with money, or any person, frankly, then it's not about just one of these different aspects. So you can't just, you know, sit in school and learn the different concepts. You actually need to be out there and connect these learnings to behavior. And that's what I think it's good with Gimme, because with Gimme, children actually get access to money. They make different kind of decisions almost every day with their money. Yeah. And they also get help in terms of, you know, guidance and great knowledge. So yeah, okay, that was a long bit.
It was actually very good and very clear. And it's very interesting what you were saying about this kind of heritage we have from our parents. Because if I think about myself when I was a child, of course, I grew up, my father was a CFO of a big company, okay? So I grew up more or less with this constant knowledge about money, economy, investment, and so on. So for my family, it was very normal, let's say, that all this topic or all this kind of subject. But I can imagine that for the majority of family, I mean, let's be honest, like money is always a sensitive topic for everybody. And these banking kind of conversation are always kind of complicated to be approached by the average audience. So I'm very curious to understand your point of view on the relationship between parents and children. And I mean, do you really think that parents should be the ones to teach children about money? Or because parents are actually your first point of interaction with the children, also within the app.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how you actually combine these two sides, like parents maybe not really aware themselves on how to manage money, and children that are your target audience, let's say.
I think there's a lot of different perspectives you're bringing up here. One is obviously like who's responsible for teaching children and the next generation about money. Obviously, like, of course, parents, they are in many ways responsible for their children's, you know, childhood and what they're being taught and so on. But I think a lot of the responsibility also lands at the school systems that we have today. And talking about the school systems, it actually goes all the way up to the government and what they are choosing in terms of what we're teaching in schools, in terms of the curriculum and so on. I mean, in terms of the financial landscape, it's changing. Maybe it has been changing more than ever in the past 10 years. And I just see that maybe the governments and all the school, also the school system, is lagging a bit behind. And that makes it even more important for the parent to take the responsibility in these questions. But as you say, like for parents, every family is different. Some parents do have some knowledge, some don't. And I think it's just really unfair to think that what the children will know will depend on what families they're being brought up in. I think like financial literacy is such an important topic. We can see like inequalities in terms of if you're a girl or if you're a boy, like many boys are raised up, you know, having like a better mindset in terms of entrepreneurship, like in terms of how they can manage their own money. I don't think it should be like that. So there has to be ways in our society to step in here and help everyone. So what you can see as well is like the ones with the most money, like if you take the like top 1% in the world that does have a lot of money, they usually have people that even help them
to
place their money and those things. So they even don't need to have financial literacy. So actually, financial literacy is the most important in countries where there is less understanding of financial literacy and so on. So right now, if we can't democratize the financial literacy education, it's going to be even bigger gaps between different countries and also different levels of the society.
It should really be a 360 kind of approach, if I can say that. I mean, governmental initiatives, families, schools. Yep. So there's not only one responsible person that should take the responsibility for that.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I don't think that schools want to make a difference here. We've been talking to a lot of teachers. There is some problems. If you want financial literacy or personal finance to be part of what you're teaching in schools, you both need teachers that has been that has a profession as personal finance teachers.
Yeah, that's also,
we don't really have that today. Secondly, we need material within personal finance. And there's a big lack of that material. Like for other subjects in like math or biologics or whatever it is, we have so much material for the teachers to use. But in some way, we have just not been researching and we have not developed that kind of material yet.
Yeah, let's see how it's going to go. I mean, I really think that your app and the journey with your startup could also find a great benefit for children and the society. Let's think a little bit more about the educational path, because what we see, even in any kind of other services, is the gamification process. Mm-hmm. We as consumers, and I'm talking about adult kind of consumers, are always very much engaged with gamification processes and things like that. So I imagine that when talking with children, this aspect is quite crucial. So I can imagine rewarding kind of games or stuff like that. What's the matter about that?
I totally agree. There's not a chance that you can teach financial literacy to a 10-year-old without having gamification. And they're on Snapchat, they're in Fortnite, you know, Robux, they're on online platforms. So their expectations on not only like financial tools, but all digital tools they're using is very high, and especially in terms of gamification. What I think is the important thing with gamification is how it's used in terms of what you're nudging, what is the behavior you want to get out of it. Unfortunately, most things I see today is actually nudging people to make sure that they are maybe spending more money than saving. You mentioned that there has been a lot of investing in savings platforms.
Yeah.
But looking at the whole market, where we're heading right now is that we're spending more money. And it's because the companies can make profit out of that. And we are living in a society and in a financial landscape right now where companies want to make profits out of this. And that is pretty much what I see it is like people are capitalizing on the fact that people have a low financial literacy. So like the worst scenario for me in 5 or 10 years time is that companies are coming to people and they're saying, hey, you're not so good with money, so let us handle the money for you.
So
let us
please
place pay. The money for you. Yeah, exactly.
Please pay to help you save.
Yeah. And if we think like, yeah, maybe it's better to take care of our money because we're not so good with it, what's going to happen in the long run is that we're going to lose the power of the money. So
but that's kind of the problem, actually, because what I see many times is that even have friends of mine, not even talking only about children, but friends of mine that maybe have even, I don't know, they are doctors or have a medical school kind of degree, and they are like, you know, managing my money is too complicated. Investment, yeah. I don't want to know. Let the bank handle it. And I'm like, come on. It should be something that you want to be involved. I mean, your financial well-being should be really one of your goals and one of the most important things, as you were saying.
Yeah, and if you think of it, many people, they educate themselves for like 15, 20 years. And when they come out to the job market, the only thing that they're working for sometimes is about money. So it's very much about like, what income do you have? But it's not so much about how are you actually using that money and making the most of the money that you have. So it's like everyone who has an education for 10, 15 years, it's just like a small, small percentage of that is about financial literacy. What if it could be 5% of everyone's education? Then we would have been using the money in a way better way. The fact is that one thing that scares me the most is just the overconsumption. We haven't had like a dip in the financial market now for maybe, what is it, 10, 11 years. So the whole new generation that has come into the job market, they haven't been you know, they haven't seen an interest rate which is really high. They haven't. Yeah. They have been constantly overconsumptioning. And I just think that, you know, people are talking about the planet and what we're doing to save this world's resources. And right now we are overconsumptioning it. And it's very much due to the fact that we're not saving. We're all again, like, we're overconsumptioning. So the effects will, I mean, if we want to do something for the planet, I think taking down the consumption a bit, not spend things on credits, make sure that you're not, you know, in debt, that would be something that would be quite good, not only for the individual, like for everyone.
Yeah, it's kind of a general benefit. And I have to say that teaching young generation brings much more hope also for the future, because even though they are kind of not so frequently considered kind of a target, they are indeed the next generation. So if you are able to teach them on a young age, they are not going to make our mistakes or our parents' mistakes.
Totally.
And in this sense, I'm very curious also to understand the relationship you might have with the banking industry, the traditional banking industry, let's say. So kids basically are not worth so much for banks, like they are not really their target audience. Although I actually think it's quite a wrong perspective, because if you think about the fact that they are actually the consumer of the future, I mean, the earlier you can get a new consumer, a new client, the better you can serve it in the future. You have data from the very beginning. You can understand their spending behavior, their financial situation from the very beginning. But of course, they cannot bring you profits and money at the very beginning. So I'm very curious to understand what's the relationship you as an entrepreneur with your startup have with banks and with this kind of traditional players. How do they see the banking for kids kind of phenomenon?
So when I started Gimme, that was, well, I got the idea back in 2014. The first thing I did was that I went with the idea, like with all my wireframes, all the sketches I made, and I went to a Swedish bank and I said, hey guys, I could build this for you if you just, you know, pay me the expenses. I went to 4 banks in Sweden. They all said no. And then I started the company on my own and, you know, went away with fundraising. Since then, I've been over and over been talking to the banks, and I think it's right what you're saying, like about there's a huge potential here. But if you look at a bank, they're a profit-based organization. And as you say, like maybe in 6 or 8 years' time, these consumers might become their future customers. But if you look at the people working in a bank, they're not working in a bank for 6 or 8 years, and they don't have roadmaps for that long. So their target is like almost on like 1 year basis. So you need to sell them something and tell them something which makes difference for them in 12 months time. And I think all about this will be about like the parents actually pushing for it. Because what we see right now is that parents are frustrated because they want to open up a bank account for their children. And when they see that the app is not adapted for the child at all, and there aren't any functionalities, that's when they're getting frustrated. So to be honest, when I talk with traditional banks now for the past 6-12 months and they understood that problem, it's a little bit easier to get past like the first doorstep and get in there. But I would say one thing that I see that many banks are working with today is the sustainable development goals from the UN. And they actually set up targets on a strategic level where they're working towards like no poverty or economic growth and so forth. Those are things that I really see help, because banks do want to take a CSR responsibility and they want to push these things forward, and they really, you know, care about their brand. So I think that might be the biggest reason for a bank to care about the children mm-hmm. and do some development and some impact for the children. And it won't be, you know, profit-based decisions, you know, on 6 or 12 months' time. But I think now that banks really see this and they really see the opportunity here.
Yeah. I mean, not always we have to think only about profit, but indeed, as you were saying, it's also a matter of brand responsibilities many times. So, and of course, if you can hook the parents with that, you can also bring the profit going up. It was a very nice conversation, actually. I have one last question for you, more about your future plans with Gimi. So it would be nice if you could share with the audience what are you up to, if you have anything to share with us or any future plans that we can follow.
Yeah, so right now we're building like really cool functionalities for children where they educate even more with how they're spending their money. Like one thing that we're launching right now is that once they bought something, they can actually, you know, press the transaction and evaluate it. Was it a great success or a deep regret? And that actually triggers their feedback loop. And they also get a list where they can see like, oh, these were the transactions I really regret, you know? So it's just an example. Then one great thing I think we're doing right now is that we created 4 chapters with e-learning lessons that is now being brought out both in the Gimi app, but also to schools here in Sweden. So it's like the first personal finance material we see is going out in the schools in Sweden. So that's actually going out now in April. It's going to be really interesting. And I think for the gamification part, we're building some really cool like avatars and levels for children when they're leveling up their XP in the Gimi app. So yeah, that's something we've been talking to the children a lot about. So I know they're asking for it, so we have to build it.
I can imagine how fun it should be, your focus group kind of activities.
And our support chat is like, if you're having a bad day, you just jump into the support and you talk to some children and you get some energy.
You'll definitely have some fun over there, I'm sure of it.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Philip, for your insights. It was very nice talking with you. And we are going to go for a short break and then we come back with other 2 guests.
Thank you.
Ciao.
At timepledge.org, we are building the largest free coaching and advisory platform for entrepreneurs by providing mentorship opportunities based on pledge time. Our network of seasoned industry experts acting as coaches is working for free, pledging their valued time to the next generation of entrepreneurs who will change everything. Our portfolio of sessions goes over every skill an entrepreneur needs to successfully launch his or her startup, from how to pitch and behave with investors to how to best market your idea online or even how to best manage your team. We have the perfect sessions with the perfect mentors. Want to learn how to become the best entrepreneur you can be or mentor the next generation of entrepreneurs in Africa and Asia? Please visit timepledge.org. And let's get you started.
Welcome back to the second part of our financial literacy episode. In the first part, as you know, we talk with the founder and CEO of Gimi, the Swedish app that is trying to get kids much more involved into a better financial well-being for their future. And now we will go a little bit more into deep, talking still about financial literacy and financial education on a broader level with other 2 guests. And let me directly introduce them to you. We have Dagmar van der Plas, sustainability manager at ING, and also the financial health lead for the Think Forward initiative. Hello, Dagmar. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Francesca. Thank you for having me.
And also, together with Dagmar, we have Joep Arends, which is the innovation producer at Deloitte and also very much involved together with Dagmar in the Think Forward initiative. Hello, Joep.
Hi, nice to be here.
All right, so let's just directly jump into the conversation. First of all, Dagmar, I really would like to understand a little bit more about the Think Forward initiative, because from what I've read, it's definitely a nice story of collaboration, education, and coming from a bank. It's quite an outstanding product, if we can call it like that, a very nice initiative from a bank like ING. So could you give us a little bit more insights about your activities there and which kind of initiative are you moving forward?
Yeah, thank you, Francesca. And let me maybe first expand a bit on why ING considers financial health as an important topic. Some people know, but not everyone knows, that money is a leading cause of stress for people around the world. There are 42% of people in Europe who are struggling to make ends meet. And on top of that, another 44% of people aren't likely to be prepared for future needs. And financial health also impacts more than just our wallets, as it's also connected to our physical health and also social well-being. And maybe a bit about a definition. So what makes people financially healthy? Well, obviously, they can pay their bills. They have set savings away. They're planning for their retirement. They can manage financial shocks. And the important part, they're generally happier because they can better reach their goals. And plus, from the sustainability angle, we very much believe that financially healthy people contribute to a healthy economy and also to help drive social progress. And in this way, ING hopes to promote sustainable and inclusive economic growth as part of the UN Sustainable Development Goals. And also, well, one thing is very clear to ING. As a bank, obviously, money is what we know best. And as a large global company, we have a responsibility and also an opportunity to make an impact. So how can we help people become more financially healthy? Well, of course, we need to make sure that some basics are in place, like accessibility. But another basic is also about figuring out the why. Why do people make the financial decisions they do? What we do, we conduct and share also research on this, which we then use as an input for the way we approach financial health. And we think our biggest impact on improving financial health can be made in three areas. That's information, innovation, and involvement. Information, because we believe that the right information at the right time can help people make better financial decisions. Innovation, because products and services are similar across banks, and we differentiate ourselves by going a step further and innovating to create tools that help customers make better financial decisions. And involvement, because we have a moral obligation in both communities we operate in and in developing countries to contribute to people's financial health. And this was maybe quite a lengthy intro, but the point is, where do information, innovation, and involvement come together? And that's with Think Forward Initiative. And the Think Forward Initiative is a purpose-driven, open partnership with currently ING, Deloitte, AWS, the Center for Economic and Policy Research, and also IBM. And it's based on the belief that our society is better off when people make sound financial decisions. And the purpose of our initiative is to empower people to make better financial decisions. And with that, help the 42% of people in Europe who struggle to make ends meet and to help them to improve their financial health. And what we do, we support research and also innovation projects to understand and also address different areas of financial health and decision making. We also bring together experts from the financial industry, its policymakers, academics, consumer groups, but also technology companies. And we all work to gain a deeper understanding of the behavior behind financial decision making, and that's in TVI's research hub. And we then turn that into actual tools that help people in the TFI accelerator. And our community hub promotes the activities of the other two hubs through our network of the TFI community members. And we also launch campaigns to ensure our work reaches the people that need it most. I feel this is a short summary, and hopefully we can
definitely
decipher.
It was definitely a very good summary of what the Think Forward initiative is doing, and it's, I have to say, quite impressive, because it sounds to me a real ecosystem kind of initiative where you have a lot of players involved, not only ING, but you, as you were mentioning, also other companies. And indeed, the purpose that you were describing is definitely beneficial, not only for the bank itself, but for the whole society. So it's definitely something that we will deep dive a little bit more after in this conversation. But before that, you were also mentioning that Deloitte is involved in the Think Forward initiative. And of course, YOUP is probably the connection between the two things. But what I was reading about you, YOUP, was also very impressive, I have to say, because you are engaged in tons of initiatives about innovation, ecosystem building, startups, and so on. And one that really got my attention was Unleash. So maybe you can give our audience a little bit more of a map of your activities and also your connection with the Think Forward initiative as well.
Thanks. Yeah, I can definitely do that. I do many different things, as you already mentioned. So that's why you also bring up Unleash probably. So maybe a couple of things that are good to share with you. So my background is innovation. So my role is always is innovation. And basically what we do with our team is we help people, organizations, companies, we help them identify opportunities for new innovations. We call it the opportunity spaces that we see in the world where innovations can be of value. Then we also help them identify innovations and then help them develop them, test in the market, and then launch and scale it into big solutions. If you look at Deloitte, for Deloitte, it's important that we always call it make an impact that matters. Of course, we do that via our business, but we also have some specific topics that we think we should spend additional time on, additional attention, because it makes sense from a more purpose perspective, social role perspective, whatever you want to call it. And one of them is Think Forward Initiative, or basically one of them is financial health, in which the Think Forward Initiative makes a big impact. So this is why we are a partner in the Think Forward Initiative. Another one you mentioned is the Unleash program. And I'm not sure if everybody is familiar with Unleash. The Unleash program is a global initiative where talents from all over the world get together to develop innovations around the Sustainable Development Goals. Of course, together with UN and a number of other partners, we try to develop and launch innovations that help specific SDGs. And I think the thing that we see more and more, and that's also a bit of the thread to all these things, is that the world society is more and more looking for innovation as a means to solve big societal challenges. And you see that the combination of technology, true understanding of the local situation, and of innovators, but also experts, academics, whatever, bringing those together and work on those societal challenges is a very powerful means to solve these challenges.
Definitely.
That's in short the things that I do.
Thanks, Youp. And you were both mentioning, the importance of educate people about the financial well-being and the sort of societal goal of empower people into understand more about their financials. And, you know, for me, it's always interesting to see that because and I was also talking about that with Philip in the first part of this episode. It's always very interesting because money is always a sensitive topic. It doesn't matter your background. You can be an engineer. You can be a doctor. And with that, I mean that it's not a matter of education in general. It's just that when talking about money, when talking about financial situation, you always try to push away the problem somehow. And this is it's quite weird because, you know, it's not a matter of how well-educated you are. It's just that it's a tricky topic always to approach. And this probably comes from the society, comes from your family, or the fear that you have about your financial health. And this is very interesting when I look at the Think Forward initiative, because I also see a lot of activities around that. For example, I'm talking about the Money Talk initiatives, which I think it's quite an interesting one to point out, Dagmar. Could you tell us a little bit more about that? How did you develop the idea, and which reactions are you getting out of that?
Yeah, I would be happy to. And let me start to say that I fully agree that financial literacy and education are important. We just launched our recent market research of the TFI, and it actually shows a few quite interesting figures. The first one is that 69% of people in Europe strongly agree that financial health should also be taught in schools.
Yeah.
And that figure may be explained because only 17% of adults in Europe say that they know about personal finances they learned at school. So they feel more need for that. And also interesting to share is that 41% say they learned it from their parents. And another interesting insight is on how financial health can be improved. So particularly that people indicate that learning by doing trial and error is the most opted response for learning about financial health. And that's followed by learning autonomously from online info and books. And maybe further diving into the topic of whom has been key in teaching people about financial health, self-learning and parents stand out. And school is indeed very, very low. So it very nicely ties into the earlier insight that financial health should be weaved into the school programs. And I feel Money Talk, which you're referring to, Francesca, is the nice bridge between parents and school to make kids aware and also spark their interest from a very early age onwards. And our mission as the Think Forward Initiative is to empower 100 million people to make better financial decisions, and this includes kids. Even though the concept of money and how it applies to your life is actually quite complex, we've also learned that children are still capable of learning about these topics as long as they develop skills and also have experiences that provide a more complete foundation for understanding them. And, well, catch them young, as the saying goes, is so true for money management.
Yeah.
By ensuring that young people from an early age are financially aware and also gradually acquire the knowledge, the skills, the attitude, and also the behaviors necessary to make sound financial decisions, they will ultimately achieve financial well-being and resilience as adults. And for this, the Think Forward Initiative created Money Talk. And it's a game that gets parents, teachers, and also kids talking about money. It's a sensitive topic. And across 5 days, it really encouraged parents to have open and fun conversations with their children. And it's around needs versus wants. It's about earning money. It's about borrowing. It's about spending wisely and also saving money. And it was developed based on academic research insights we've gained via the Think Forward Initiative research. And this makes it a very engaging and fun game to play. Again, with the purpose to improve the financial literacy of our little future leaders.
Yeah, and I have the feeling that, as you were saying, when you, it's a sort of normalize something. And if you do it when you are a kid, it's even easier to be able to get in this sort of normal cycle of not only talking about money, but also try to build up all the activities around that in a much more wise way. So also the gaming part, it's very interesting. That's why also apps like Gimme or tons of others have that success to this target. And it's very interesting to see that this initiative is coming from a bank, because, of course, we don't see a lot of attention toward this specific target, kids and young generation. my assumption, but maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that companies are not really focusing on that because of the not immediate profitability they can get out of this specific target. Although I think that if you can catch them in early age, you have their data, you have their spending behavior, and you have the customer of the future. So what's your feeling around that? Do you think big players are actually moving, or it's more a sort of up-and-comers players like startups and so on?
Yeah, so you said, correct me if you're wrong, partly. But what I see, so basically, if you look at an innovation, for an innovation to be successful, three elements are very important. So the innovation should be desirable from a consumer user perspective. You should develop something that people really, really want. The second thing is, it should be feasible. You should be able to make it. And the third element, it should be viable. So with viable, we mean it should fit your strategy, but also the numbers should add up. So it should make business sense. And what you typically see with the solutions aimed at the younger audience in the finance world is that viability, and making something that is sound from a business case perspective, is more difficult. And a couple of elements that make it more difficult. You can often target only a small group with a solution aimed at the younger generations. I always use the example. So people that are 41 or 48, that's not a huge difference in their needs and the way they live and stuff like that. People, kids 9 or 16 is a huge difference. So you see typically that solutions only work for a bit of a smaller group. And the second thing that makes it difficult is what you also mentioned, is that the real benefit is often not during that period, but in a later stage. So what we see in the market is that I see a lot of initiatives, both from the big players as the new and upcoming companies, but it's sometimes difficult to maintain these initiatives. So I see many new initiatives start, but also quite a few that in the end fail or get stopped again, because in many cases they don't get the numbers right. And I see both, again, start and stop both at the big companies as at as with the up-and-coming companies.
Players.
So in my view, of course, it's a pity that we haven't nailed it yet, but I'm an innovation guy, so I know that someday we will nail it. And part of this process is understanding what doesn't work. And as long as we keep experimenting and keep track of what does work and what does not work, we can keep improving. And that will help in the end develop something that also in the long run will help the younger generations with their finance and with teaching them finance. And I think that the question should also not be, is it either the new players or the incumbents? It should, especially in this field, be a combination, because you see that especially the larger organizations benefit from clients that are with them for a long time, because they often have solutions and propositions for the younger and for the middle age and for the elderly. So for them, it makes a lot of sense to invest early. If you compare that to many startups that only have a point solution for a certain age bracket. So that collaboration might be one of the key elements to basically solve the viability problem here.
Yeah, it's always, I mean, when talking about innovation, we always feel that it's a collaboration kind of process. There's no one that has the one and only solution for everything. So as you were saying, it's also a learning by doing, have probably the patience to wait and see what has been done before, made it wrong, and so on.
I would love to add one thing to it. So one thing that's going to help us a lot is that there's more and more research coming out that shows us that focusing on financial health, regardless of the age bracket, but focus on financial health, leads to more satisfied and more loyal customers, and also more customers that want to do more business with you. So you see the companies focusing on financial health, their clients on average use more of their products. So it
a happier
is
point.
A there is a business sense to focus on financial health.
Yeah, definitely. It's probably also a matter of trying to apply that in the concrete world, let's say. So and see the what's going to be the outcome in some years, not really expecting an immediate result. So it's good that you mentioned all this research, and I see that also in the Think Forward initiative, you are basically building up quite a research powerhouse. But as I was mentioning before, probably the difficulty is also try to get all this research material in concrete activities. So Dagmar, how do you manage this kind of bridge between all the initiatives you are building around and actually the real world impact?
Yeah, very, very important and critical question. Here, I also would like to stress the importance to not only focus on reach and relevance, so the information layer, but to really push to change behavior and to positively change outcomes in behavior. We all know that financial health has become more important over the last year, unfortunately, because the COVID-19 crisis has hit society and also highlighted the fragility of people's financial situations. And to build a sufficient saver buffering is essential to deal with financial shocks and also to stay financially healthy. However, many people still struggle to accumulate their savings, and it's essential and also part of our societal responsibility to contribute to help these people save for a rainy day and also build a sustainable financial health. And therefore, the Think Forward initiative started a collaboration with ING the Netherlands to help customers with little to no savings. And the challenge we have is to increase savings amongst ING NL customers who have less than 2,000 euro savings on their accounts. And currently, that's quite a whopping 40% of the total ING Mass customer base. And what we would like to do is to help them build short-term saving habits and behaviors. And we do this via tests to learn what insights are most effective to motivate people to start saving and maybe also increase their savings. And we link them to accessible tools and innovations in their banking app. And what I like about the insights is that they are tailored to a specific customer target segment. They're also building upon that money management momentum, and they are based on validated behavioral change techniques. So that's very, very important. And we track direct and also indirect impact, including click-through rates, activities in the app or in the tools, and also fluctuations in savings to ultimately define the impact of each message and to give recommendations also for scaling. And after 9 months, we consider ourselves successful if we have proven that we have impacted 20,000 people and that the effective interventions are ready to be scaled to make bigger impact. And the second example I would like to give is the Financial Health Index we're currently developing. To first test in the Netherlands and after proved impact scale to other European countries, hopefully. And we see the Financial Health Index as one metric to report, engage, and also create positive impact to empower individuals to assess their financial health and also to take action. And it could be for individuals, for example, or households, employees, but also governments who might want to know how their citizens are doing. And it could also support companies in measuring, reporting, and also acting upon financial health. And we like to develop the body mass index of financial health. And that means that it needs to be widely supported. It needs to be easy to calculate and understand. It needs to trigger a call to action. It needs to be accessible to all. And it's a quick scan rather than a full body scan. And like the Think Forward initiative, this again is an open source collaboration between Think Forward initiative, the Dutch Budget Institute Nibud, but also several other Dutch financial institutions, including ING. And we really hope that awareness around this index will trigger engagement individuals and also institutions are offered a very easy 10 questions to measure financial health, resulting in segments. For example, you have trouble, you're just coping, you're doing okay, and you're doing great. There's the similarity again with the body mass index. And the second step is that engagement triggers action. And a great way for people to get a very quick holistic view on their financial health. They are empowered to take action themselves or to target them with specific propositions, which are tied again to the different clusters of financial health. And action will hopefully result in positive impact. Over time, we hope to be able to see the segments of financial distress decrease and also financial health increase. And yeah, I can talk for hours about it. Just want to highlight these two of the many examples we have to share and also use as Think Forward initiative. And I also would like to take the opportunity to make a call for action here to all who want to join us in the journey to improve the financial health of people who struggle to make ends meet. And please do contact me if there's an interest to collaborate with Think Forward initiative.
Yeah, definitely. We will share with our audience the website of the Think Forward initiative for sure. So people can definitely have a look at your activities. And it seems a very well-structured approach, I have to say, based on real impact measures. So it's definitely good to hear that from you, Dagmar. And you were mentioning about the difficult times we are facing currently. And this led me to think about the different ways people have to adapt of this situation, because, of course, except from the fact that we have to be much more empowered because we had this digitalization push for the condition we all are. But also the economical situation changed a lot, and specifically from some categories of people or for some specific geographies. I'm talking from Italy, and the economic situation for many people is it's quite tough at the moment. So, of course, I can expect that people are going to be much more aware of their financial situation, or at least much more wise in thinking about their spending behavior and the way they use their personal resources. Joop, what's your feeling about that? Do you think that people in the future, considering the whole pandemic crisis, are going to be much more willing to think wisely about their personal finances? Do you see any elastic kind of behavior or a much more conscious approach?
Yeah, so the first thing that is happening, which helps people to rethink their savings, is that we see savings in a different light. And we used to, when things went well financially, the main focus of people was, how can I make more money out of my savings? So savings, they talk about the interest rate and finding the best interest rate. All of a sudden, unfortunately, but all of a sudden we understand, oh, there was another thing why we save, to have like a emergency fund or a buffer if all of a sudden our income reduces significantly. So that realization, being conscious that savings is not only to make more money, but really like a safety net, that is helping people to rethink their finance and how to deal with finance. This is of course a good thing. Next to that, we see already for a couple of years actually that financial health and financial education is becoming a more important topic. And if you look at the early indicators, typically something that we as innovators look at, you see that the topic is mentioned more often. We see that the link to physical and mental health is made more often. For example, what you see happening is that employers who provide their employees with well-being programs include more and more financial services in there as well, or a financial advisor or a financial coach or financial education. Last month, I think, I saw an article about financial health in a physical health magazine. I believe it was Women's Health. And so you see that basically that you are asking us about education and financial health. So you see that the topic is getting more and more attention. And I think that that's a good thing. Of course, it's also driven by the specific situation at this moment, COVID-19. Yeah. And the key is that we need to make this change or this extra attention long lasting. And I think that's why initiatives are, as the Think Forward initiative, but many others like us, are so important to keep focusing on financial health, but especially the behavior side of it. And that's that you mentioned it yourself. When finance is hard, and you're not saying it's hard because it's difficult to understand how a mortgage works. You said like people tend to push away the problem or they fear about financial health. And that's the core of why financial health or finance is difficult, because it's not the technical difficulties, but the fear or that we want to push the problem away or that our brain is not really capable of thinking long term about savings and pensions. We want to live today, stuff like that. So it's crucial that we keep developing solutions, innovations, communications that take these behavioral elements into account. And if we do that correctly, then we can truly help people become more financially healthy.
Definitely. And as I was saying, I think it's a matter of normalize the topic. And so I really think that your activities are amazing in this sense. And I want to thank you both for the great insight you gave to our audience. It was a very interesting conversation, and I think we covered quite some important topics today. So thanks a lot, Joep, and thanks a lot, Dagmar.
Yeah, thank you
really
for having us. Pleasure for the hours.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And thanks to our audience. So remember to keep following Breaking Banks on our social media channels and all our streaming platforms. And see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Breaking Banks Europe, a Provoke Media podcast in cooperation with FinTech Stage. Don't forget to tweet us out, shout out, or post to the team at Breaking Banks EU on Twitter. If there's something or someone you'd like to hear on our cast, let us know. See you next week on Breaking Banks Europe.